seated.
District Judge Roberto Lang, entitled Larry Dieter, Director of the Insurance of the State of South Dakota versus XL Specialty Insurance Company. Before I introduce the parties, I want to acknowledge and express my appreciation for Judge Craig Feifley sitting with the court this morning in place of Justice Devaney, who has recused herself on the case. Appearing on behalf of the plaintiff and arguing this morning is Stephen Sanford from Sioux Falls. Appearing on behalf of the defendant, XL Specialty Company, with Mark Haig, who's appearing as local counsel, South Dakota counsel, and then Thomas Judge from Washington, D.C., who will be arguing this morning on behalf of the defendant, XL Specialty Insurance. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument, and we're not going to take any rebuttal argument on the case. We'll hear from each side. You want a rebuttal?
I was told the notice that I give 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. Well, if that's what we said, then we'll give you 5 minutes. Go ahead, Mr. Sanford. You can start your 15-minute argument.
May it please the court, for the record, my name is Stephen Sanford. I represent Larry Dieter, the Director of Insurance in South Dakota, in his capacity as liquidator of ReliaMax Surety Company, an insolvent insurer. I don't want to spend a lot of time on context background. We've breached it all, but just for the record, insurance companies are not eligible debtors under federal bankruptcy law. So for that reason, virtually every state has enacted a procedure, an insolvency, liquidation, rehabilitation, liquidation proceeding for insurance companies that essentially imitate the federal bankruptcy code and look to accomplish the same purposes, particularly in a liquidation. The liquidator acts like a trustee in bankruptcy, pursuing the same objectives, finding out information, collecting assets, handling claims of creditors, that sort of thing. And this particular proceeding arose out of that effort. Claims against the directors and officers, not only of ReliaMax Surety, but of its parent company, and pursuit of the insurance coverage, liability insurance coverage, which, by the way, what we're here about today is an insurance policy in which ReliaMax Surety Company is an insured. And of course, policies exclude a claim of an insured against another insured, but in this instance, the policy contains an exception for when there's a liquidation, exactly what we have here. Many states have enacted a uniform law for insurance liquidations, a uniform law. South Dakota is one of them. Regarding the section that we're going to talk about today, 23 of the 29 states have adopted exactly the same Section 56 that we're going to be talking about, using the 180-day provision or time frame. Six states have adopted the current version, which is reduced 180 day to 60 days. We still have the 180 day provision. All right.
Does this council extend the time, this extension of time, to make the claim by 180 days? Doesn't this effectively extend the contracted for policy period when dealing with the claims made policy?
It is a claims made policy, yes. The certified question from Judge Lang makes reference to extending the coverage period, and that isn't quite the way it works. The policy expired on July 1, 2018, 4 days after the liquidation proceeding was commenced. All right? So the statute does not extend the period of coverage so that, in the sense that acts or omissions post July 1 would be covered. The only extension is the time within which to make a claim and give notice of that claim based on acts and omissions that occurred during the policy period.
That's sort of the essence of a claims made policy, though. Notice is essentially what the insured and the insurer contract for, other than the peril that's covered during an occurrence period. Notice is everything.
Yeah.
In a claims made policy. So, but you don't think that extends, and if it does, maybe it does, I don't know, we just have to read the statute, but you don't think that necessarily extends the coverage period?
Well, maybe we're going back and forth about terminology instead of substance, but we're talking about claims about acts and omissions that occurred before July 1, 2018. The question before us, before the court, is, all right, does Section 56 extend by 180 days the period within which notice of a claim and the making of the claim can occur so that the effect of that is the same as if the claim were made and the notice were given before July 1. And that's what we're here about, and we believe that Section 56 specifically and undeniably says so.
Who's the liquidator acting as in this action? Is the liquidator acting as the insolvent insurer, or is the liquidator acting in place of individual directors and officers seeking indemnity coverage, or does it matter?
Well, whether it matters or not, it's pretty specific, and that is we are wearing the RelyMax surety hat as an insured under the directors and officers liability policy, making a claim against directors and officers for wrongful acts that contributed to the insolvency. And the very reason that we're all here and that the liquidation took place. So, and we're section, well, 58, 29B, 42 specifically gives the liquidator inherits whatever rights, contracts, agreements that RelyMax Surety Company had before the liquidation was filed.
Yeah, the briefs don't really talk about it. Maybe it's not an issue, but the language in 58, 29B, 56 authorizes the liquidator to act for the benefit of the estate. I get that. Take any such action or do any such act required of or permitted to the insurer. Is the liquidator doing that by pursuing D&O coverage for these individuals?
Yes, but more. All right. I mean, we are under the XL policy and the Pioneer policy that was the underlying primary policy. We had the right to make an insured claim against directors and officers. All right, the policy expressly says so. All right, and that's what we're doing. And there's an exception the insured versus insured typically is not covered. But the policies make an exception when, in fact, there is a liquidator or regulatory proceeding. That's what we're doing here. We are making a claim that we have a right to make under the policy. All right, and it's for...
Can I have you circle back to Justice Kirk's question? Because I didn't think that the answer I heard was clear enough for me. The hallmark of claims made policy is that policy covers claims that are made within the policy.
Right, exactly, yes.
You talked about the occurrence issue and that you were not, quote, extending coverage. I think your argument by necessity requires there to be an extension of coverage during that 180-day period based upon the fact that we're talking about it.
I think I'm fussing too much over terminology, but the liability, the acts and omissions for which there is coverage, for which we get the extension of time to make the claim and give notice of the claim, occurred before July 1, 2018. All right? So if you renew a policy, so after July 1, 2018, if a policy is renewed, that means that claims and that acts and omissions during the renewal period would also be covered. We're not making that claim. What we're saying is that the statute treats a notice by a liquidator and a claim by a liquidator within 180 days after the policy expired, treats it as though it were made during the policy period. That's its effect. And so we're looking... In the underlying suit against the directors and officers to recover for damages caused by acts and omissions before July 1, 2018. So if you look at it's the second sentence of 56 that we're talking about, and only a portion of the sentence. It starts, if by any agreement a period of limitation is fixed for instituting a suit or proceeding upon a claim, or, and it goes on, for filing a claim, proof of loss, demand, etc. So if you start with the word any, that's the first significant word. All right, what's any mean? All right, while this section has not been the subject of prior judicial decision, any has been by this court's decision in Central Monitoring. Any is every. All right. The word any does not admit of any exceptions. All right. So then, next word, agreement. All right. Are we dealing with an agreement? Well, yes. How do we know that? Because Excel says so. Their policy says it's an agreement. All right? So then we go to the next phrase, which is fixes a period of limitation. All right? So how do we know that this claims-made policy fixes a period of limitation? Well, if you look at Excel's brief at page 11, footnote 6, it says, unlike an occurrence policy, a claims-made policy requires that the claim be made during the policy period. All right? So, does it fix a period of limitation? Well, yes, it does, because the claim has to be made after the first day of the policy and before the last day. It fixes a period of limitation. And so, with that, the statute clearly is an insurance statute, all right? The underlying policy says that South Dakota law applies. This court has held several times that insurance statutes are read within as though they are part of the insurance policy. So we take these words and place them within the policy. And what it says then is absolutely undeniable. All right? The claims made policy fixes a period of limitation. All right? Even though it fixes a period of limitation, in this unique circumstance that all insurers are subject to, because these are the insurance laws of South Dakota, the policy is deemed to allow a liquidator to make a claim and give notice of a claim within that 180-day period to the same effect as though it were made during the policy period before the last day. Basic statutory interpretation about, particularly about insurance statutes. You try to give effect to their plain meaning. You look for the intended effect and the evident purpose. You don't make an interpretation that is absurd, that renders the words absurd. And you don't, if you can avoid it, you don't make the words meaningless. And applying all those, in fact, the liquidator, as an insured under the XL policy, had a right to give the notice within the 180 days, which undeniably we did, to the same effect as though that claim had been made and the notice had been made during the policy period before the period of limitation ended. Yes, thank you.
Mr. Judge, you may proceed. You have 15 minutes.
May it please the court, Thomas Judge on behalf of defendant XL Specialty Insurance Company. I'd like to start by addressing Your Honor's question. Coverage sought by the liquidator is as a claimant seeking coverage that actually belongs to the directors and officers who are the subject of the claim. Through the action in the federal court, the liquidator is seeking to gain coverage for a $10 million consent judgment subject to a comprehensive covenant not to execute against those directors and officers who allegedly pilfered the LIMAX Surety Company. The D's and O's, if the liquidator ultimately prevails in this case, it'll be the directors and officers who will have received claims made coverage, direct defense, and indemnity coverage for free as a result of the liquidator's approach to the case.
Well, that was kind of my question. but I don't know if I'm slicing it too fine. The liquidator has a couple different roles in this case, and I think it's kind of important. Maybe it's not important to the resolution of the case or answering the question, but in my mind it's kind of important to orient myself to what those various roles are and where they begin and where they leave off. And it might ultimately matter because the text of the statute requires and allows this extension only if the liquidator is doing something that is required of or permitted to the insurer. Is that significant?
It is significant, Your Honor. The role, the liquidator is not seeking coverage for RSC as an insurance company, as an insured under this policy that's been subject to a claim. We're not here today because somebody made a claim against RSC and or the liquidator by extension, for which the liquidator on behalf of RSC is seeking coverage. Instead, we're here today with the liquidator on behalf of the RSC estate asserting claims against the directors and officers and trying to perfect the coverage for the directors and officers in response to that claim.
Forgive me, now I'm trying to remember the briefs, which I've read several times. Did you make that argument?
I've tried as best I could, Your Honor. I kept italicizing that the liquidator is seeking coverage by way of through the D's and O's, and the liquidator's counsel, you know, constantly says, we have multiple hats. That's
no, I read that, but did you make that textual argument? Did you make that distinction that I remember that part, but maybe I didn't see it or see it correctly, but did you make the textual argument that because of this role that they have, the liquidator can't proceed under this statute, doesn't have the authority textually?
Well, it does have the authority, but it's not utilizing such authority here. It's trying to, and I apologize if I didn't make this clear, but
no, you're fine.
They're trying to obtain coverage for a claim they're making against an insured, which and contrary to what counsel is saying, the insuring agreement doesn't refer to wrongful acts or when those wrongful acts are made. The policy doesn't say anything about when wrongful acts are made or should be made in order for there to be coverage. It says the claim must be first made against the insureds during the policy period. And that insuring agreement doesn't put any obligation on the insureds to do anything. It puts an obligation on the insurer to do something if the claim is made by anybody against the insureds. Those insureds who are subject to that claim, here are the D's and O's, if they had received a claim during the policy period, subject to the other terms and conditions of the policy, they would be entitled to coverage. What will happen here, if you were to find in favor of the liquidator, you will extend the coverage period. This policy, unlike the policy in Sheldon, the insuring agreement here, which is what we are focused on, and in fact, the liquidator in the brief never quotes the insuring agreement, never references it, and today, before you, he didn't mention it. He talks about, oh no, the wrongful acts occurred here or there, doesn't tie that those terms into the insuring agreement. The insuring agreement concerns only when the claim was first made.
Well, in a sense, though, if we accept that argument, don't we have to really ignore Section 56 that says, if by any agreement? That language seems pretty clear to me, that there's a certain claim or there's a certain notice period, those sorts of things. It's going to be extended 180 days, and it doesn't differentiate what kind of notice or what sort of period, but how do you get around that? I mean, you know, we have case law that says, you know, we read the statutes in as part of the policy, and in a sense, anytime there's a notice period, you're going to extend coverage if you extend the notice period. So how do you avoid that statutory language?
Absolutely. We're not trying to avoid it. We're trying to apply it as written. This is not about extending a notice period. There's a notice period in this provision that requires notice to be given within 60 days of when a claim is made. You could extend that. You could extend the time for the optional purchase of extension of coverage, which was also 60 days after the expiration of the policy period. The statute could extend that as well. The statute, the extension for the filing of a suit, the filing of a proof of loss, of a claim, the agreement has to provide for that. Counsel's right. The policy is a contract. The insuring agreement is an agreement. But it is not an agreement fixing the time for the... There are two parties to that insuring agreement. There's the insurance company, and there's the insureds. The insureds are the recipients of claims. They don't file claims. They don't make claims. They don't make proofs of claims, proofs of loss, which are all first-party insurance terminology. They receive claims from third parties, from anybody. Those claimants can make claims whenever they want. This agreement is not an agreement with them. It's an agreement between the insurance company and those insureds who receive a claim. And then those insureds, in this case, would be the D's and O's, they get defense and indemnity coverage. So we're not asking the court to ignore the plain terms of the statute. We're asking you to apply them. Liquidator is painted with far too broad a brush, as I said in the brief. The agreement in this case, there's an agreement, and it's the insuring agreement, the one they constantly ignore. It's between the insurance company and the insureds who are recipients of claims. They are the subject of the claims. They don't make the claims against themselves. They receive the claims. Claims are made against them by anybody. That insuring agreement is not fixing the period for third parties to make claims against the insureds.
Counsel, isn't it inherent in a claims-made policy that unless the claim is presented within the policy period, the claim would not be honored by the carrier because that's the nature of the coverage? And so by inherent definition, is that not the period of limitation?
It's not, Your Honor, because the period of limitation is one fixed by agreement between the parties to the agreement. So I would say yes if this was an agreement with claimants saying, look, we give coverage to claimants if you submit a claim within this claims-made period. But that's not how it works. The claimants aren't parties to this agreement. So it's not fixing their time to do anything. So this is an agreement only between the insureds and the insurer. So,
but if the liquidator is acting in his role as an insured, when he makes a notice of the claim within the 180-day period, would that not satisfy the statute?
So two parts to that, and that's a perfect question because it highlights the principle perfectly. The liquidator would have extra time to give that notice. If the RSC, the Limex Surety Company, had been subject to a claim during the policy period, the liquidator would have added time to provide notice of that claim. But the party making the claim and the timing of when the claim is made against RSC, the insured, that claimant is not subject to any agreement in the insurance policy.
But does it have to be? Does the claimant have to be subject to that? Does the statute require that? Or does rather the statute just say, hey, if there's an agreement that requires notice, the notice gets moved out?
Well, I don't think that fits the actual terms of the statute. If by agreement a time period is fixed, a time period between the parties to this agreement, the insureds who are the subject of claims and the insurer who's going to provide defense and indemnity coverage in response to those claims, this is not fixing the time for either party to do anything. And that's, as you read that in the statute, it says, or anything else that the agreement requires the insurer to do.
Textually, is there a reason why this statute can't apply generically to claims-made policies? Is that your argument, or it just doesn't apply to this claims-made policy?
It's the latter, Your Honor, and I'll use Sheldon as a comparison. Sheldon is referred in that decision as a claims-made policy, but it's worded completely differently in the insuring agreement. If you look at pages 316 and 317, the court recites the insuring agreement, and it says, the policy provides coverage for claims first made during or after the policy period. And then it has requirements about when the wrongful acts had to be completed, and it had requirements about notice. It's a different policy, materially different policy, than the policy before you. What the statute is focused on is an agreement and parties to an agreement, fixing a time period for somebody to do something. And that's not what this insuring agreement does. So it's not an agreement with claimants. Claimants can make a claim whenever they want, and they don't get coverage whenever they make it. Even if they make it during the claims-made policy period, that coverage doesn't run to the claimant. It runs to the directors and officers who are the subject of a claim. It would run to Limex Surety Company if it was the subject of a claim. It would be entitled to defense and indemnity coverage. But so the agreement, and the reason why, there's a reason why courts haven't seen this issue. There are statutes like this, as counsel has pointed out, all over the country. And they're in liquidations, they're in receiverships, they're in bankruptcies. There's a reason why this issue has not come up, and it's the general assumption, in my view, because this does, claims get asserted out of bankruptcies, liquidations, and receiverships all the time against directors and officers. And the reason why this doesn't come up is because the understanding that you can buy optional extension coverage under these policies, you could extend the time to buy these policies, You can get additional time to give notice, but you can't. The claims made part of this policy is not an agreement between the insureds and the insurer fixing the time period for the insureds to do anything. It's for third parties who can file, make a claim whenever they want.
So if that's the case, I guess I don't quite understand your response to Justice Salter's question about, is this about any claims made policy or this specific policy? I hear you arguing it's about any claims made policy.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay, so what's the distinction? Why is this policy special? And if so, you're saying then really you can just draft around this statute even though it says any agreement and an insurance company can draft around it.
Well, to start out, Your Honor, to be clear, the courts have said in all sorts of contexts, when you apply savings provisions like this one in the statute, you have to apply it in conjunction with the terms of the contract at issue. So the parties can contract as they so choose. And so the fact that a contract doesn't fit, and this is shown in the case law with grace periods, that one we've highlighted this John L. Sullivan case, where the court said there's no provided grace period here for the payment of additional premiums. You have to have a contractual provision that makes the savings provision relevant. So in the claims made policy in Sheldon, it was claims made, but the claim could be made either during or after the policy period. That's not this claims made policy.
Except for 60 days. Except for they had an additional 60 days to make their notice of claim. Even under this, even without the statute, there was an additional 60 days under which there could be a claim.
Right. But under that statute, you could make the claim after the policy period in any event. The insuring agreement said the claim could be made during or after the policy period. That's what I'm saying. That's completely different than the insuring agreement here, which says the claim must be made during the policy period.
Do you think that, and I notice your submissions focused on this a lot. This doesn't say if by the insuring agreement a time limitation is fixed. It just says by any agreement. So you have an insuring agreement within a much larger insurance agreement. Are you reading that one a little too narrowly, perhaps?
Respectfully.
Your time's up, but you can answer the question.
Thank you, Your Honor. Respectfully, Your Honor, no, we're not. And the reason why is because the insuring agreement is what we're relying upon to say to the D's and O's, there is no coverage because the claim was not first made in accordance with the insuring agreement against you during the policy period. No further questions?
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sanford, you have 5 minutes.
Okay. Liquidation order is filed on June 27, 2018. All right. The liquidator is responsible for pursuing all claims, not only the claims that the insolvent insurer had against others, but also represents all the claimants against ReliMax Surety in the liquidation, all right? It's also an insured under the claims made policy, all right? So if by some miracle the liquidator knew about the possibility of the claims and the insurance coverage and gave notice in that 4-day period before the policy expired, what then? Then, the liquidator, representing the ReliMax Surety as the insured under the policy, has given notice and made a claim under the XL policy. And XL has to cover it for the D's and O's. All right. But in that kind of proceeding, miracles don't happen. And because miracles don't happen, that's why there's this extension. Because it takes time to figure that stuff out, right? And to investigate and do that. That's the purpose of the statute, giving the liquidator extra time to assert the rights under agreements.
Is it just an interesting fact, or is it at all significant in your view, that that they purchased, you know, the tilt coverage for the underlying policy, but not the excess policy? And I looked, but didn't see, but the brief seemed to suggest that that was an option, and maybe it was, and maybe it's in there, and I didn't find it, but I wasn't even sure it was an option, but maybe it was. But in any event, does that bear at all upon what we're doing in this certified question inquiry?
Well, first of all, the Pioneer policy, the primary policy, provided the opportunity to produce or to purchase excess notice period coverage for a massive amount, by the way. It has been reported that the parent company, Reliamax Holding Company, bought the extension. All right, that's just a report. I don't know if that's actually true. We've sort of assumed it to be true because it doesn't matter. Their subject, you know, if I were a director of Reliamax Holding Company, with all its other subsidiaries and businesses, I would want to purchase it because I could possibly be sued by someone who doesn't have what the statute gives us. All right? And so why they did it, if they did it, is perhaps logical and understandable, but it has nothing to do with what we're talking about here. The question here is, does it mean anything? Is it just a pile of words, or does it really mean something? And if any agreement means any agreement, it's theirs. It's XL. And as an insured under the XL policy, we had the right to give the notice and make the claim within that 180-day period to the same effect as though the miracle had happened, that we had done it, learned about it, and done it within the 4 days. And the reason for it is immensely logical. And to say that it doesn't apply when, in fact, it doesn't apply where it's most needed. What? That means that it's meaningless. Because under a claims-made policy, that's about where we need it the most. And it's there's no exception, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Your Honor, I certainly understand, because I was only given the option to respond initially. We were cross movements below. The liquidator had the opportunity to file two briefs, and then has also had the opportunity to provide rebuttals, raising some issues that I didn't really have the opportunity to address at the podium. If you don't want me to step up again, I will not. And that's understood.
But I think it's a fair comment. I'll give you 2 minutes if you want to respond to any of the response here, Mr. Sand.
I wanted to address Your Honor's question to counsel first. Or no, it was Your Honor's question. The policy specifically provide 60 days after the expiration of the policy periods to purchase extensional, a year's extensions of coverage.
And that's in the policy.
It's in the policy.
And I wondered about that. Thank you. Appreciate that. Does it matter?
It does matter, because that extension period could actually have been extended. That option to purchase could have been extended by the statute. The statute has been interpreted to extend extension periods for options. But instead of everybody seeking to buy coverage beyond the primary policy and buy the extended coverage under the excess policy, they want you to give it to them, the D's and O's, for free. And counsel saying, well, what is this used for? What is it good for? That statute applies within this policy in several ways. They could have extended the option period for purchasing excess coverage. You could use it to extend the time for giving notice of a claim that you hadn't figured out, had been made, and you could give notice of it. What you can't do is change the actual, expand the coverage period for free. And not one of these other cases has expended the coverage period for free. And counsel's before you today saying, you have to do this. This is, of course. But they could, you could purchase additional coverage. You can get late notice. But you can't get 6 months of free coverage. And that's what they are seeking. Occurrence policies, that doesn't happen. You get extra time on the notice on an occurrence policy. First-party policies, it's all about when the damage occurred. Occurrence policies, when the injury occurred. You can extend the notice time for submitting the claim for coverage. The use of a claim in this insurance contract is about a claim made against insureds, not the insureds making the claim. And the coverage is there for those who are the subject of the claim. That's all. Thank you very much for indulging.
Appreciate the briefing and good arguments from both sides. The case is now submitted to the court. Thank you.